Are you considering homeschooling your child who has special needs? Are you already in the trenches and you're feeling like, oh, am I doing the right thing? Mary Ellen has been there already, and Ginny has a lot of knowledge to bring to this subject. So we're going to tackle the five things you need to know about homeschooling a child with special needs, and then stay tuned for an important announcement about the podcast.
And welcome to the Stay at Homeschooling Mom podcast. My name is Mary Ellen Barrett, and I am being joined by my partner in crime and dear friend, Ginny Supert. Today's topic is one that's going to resonate with many of you. But first, let's thank our primary sponsor, Seton Home Study School. They have been providing Catholic curriculum to home educating parents for over 40 years now. They have books, they have lesson plans, they have counselors, they have grading, they have a guidance department to help you with getting into college. They have all the things, really, everything you need. So check them out at www.setonhome.org. There's a little beginner's guide there you can click on, and it takes you through a little video tour of the school. And at the end, you get a little discount code. So if you enroll, you can save a few dollars that way. Now, before we begin our topic, I'm just going to ask you to stay on till the end, because we do have a big announcement about our show here. So, Ginny, what are we talking about here?
Well, today we're going to talk about five things you should know about homeschooling your child with special needs. And first, let's talk about how we're defining things here.
Yeah.
When we speak about a child that has educational issues outside the norm, we mean children specifically who have been diagnosed with a neurological or physical condition that in some way impairs learning or makes learning particularly challenging in some way. Very often, this is why kids are homeschooled, because the classroom just wasn't working out for them because of their special needs. But before we get into our five important things that you should know, I'd like to talk a minute about how to get a diagnosis.
Oh, very important. Yes.
And how not to get a diagnosis.
Yes.
The how not to get a diagnosis is social media.
Right. Don't ask people on Facebook what's wrong with your kid.
Right.
First of all,
I think it's sort of a violation of privacy. But beyond that, people are going to answer based on their own experiences.
Right. And while their experience may be good and valid for their family, it has nothing to do with you. They don't know your kid or your family or your background or like anything. It has nothing to do with you.
It has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with your family. And so don't do that. But to give an example, let's say, you know, little Johnny, you send him into his room and say, listen, get on your blue shirt. And he comes back on with his maroon shirt. And he does this all the time. And he seems not to be able to listen to instructions. Now, he could have attention deficit disorder. That's possible.
Sure.
He absolutely could. He could have a hearing loss.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't hear what you're saying to him, or he only hears part of it. He could have an auditory processing disorder. So he hears it, but, you know, he can't quite process it through his brain. Or he could be colorblind.
Or he could not like that blue shirt.
Nothing to be concerned about at all. So if you see something that seems to be a pattern, so if the kid does it once or twice, like who cares? If your three-year-old all of a sudden becomes defiant, guess what? Three-year-olds become defiant. That's what they do. Don't be too, it's not necessarily, you know, oppositional defiant disorder. It's just the kid is three.
Yeah, three is about taming the will, and it's hard.
It is.
it's really hard.
So clearly, if you have a child that is just, you know, like I say, all of a sudden trying to exert his own will over you, or a child who doesn't seem to listen to instructions, or a child who really does seem to be, you're showing him his letters and his numbers, and tomorrow when you bring him back again the next day, he doesn't remember any of it at all.
Right. Somebody who's really struggling, really, really struggling.
I mean, it could be a vision problem. It could be kidneys, glasses. It could be something that's so the thing to do in that case is see a professional.
Right.
If your child isn't listening well to you, get his hearing checked. If he seems to have trouble with what you're showing him to read or write or whatever, get his vision checked. See a professional. Now, some of you may say, well, you know, professionals cost a lot of money, Jen.
Yeah, but they do. They do.
They do. There's no question about it. Very often, your local public school district, you know where you pay taxes to, can provide you with an evaluation.
Yeah. In our state, it's called early intervention, and up until 3 years old, they will even send therapists to your house. You have the child tested and they diagnose, and then I had that for Ryan. He had speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy in the house until he was three, and then he went to a special needs preschool. It was immersive. It was all immersive for language. So Yeah, we couldn't have afforded to do that on our own, you know, privately. So it was, I mean, we do like to knock the school districts, but you are paying for these kinds of services. And I don't know of a state where you're not entitled to it just because you homeschool. I can't think of that, but you could also check with HSLDA. But that's how you do get a diagnosis. It's not from your mother-in-law or your best friend or strangers online. It's start with your pediatrician and have the vision and hearing checked. And they teach people in medical school that the most common thing is usually the thing, right?
Like it's when you called Occam's razor.
Oh, yeah?
Occam's razor. What it means basically is if you hear barking coming from your neighbor's yard, it could be an African hyena who broke out of the pool and went, but most likely it's his dog.
I was just going to say, if you hear hooves, it's a horse, not a zebra, unless happen to be in Africa.
That's called Occam's razor. The most
I didn't know it had a name.
That's what it's called. It's the most simple, practical answer is probably the correct one. Now, not always. There are some people who have sort of exotic conditions and
sure,
stuff. But the vast majority of you, if you take your child to a pediatrician, the pediatrician can often diagnose things pretty quickly or say, well, I'm really worried about his vision, so I'm going to send you to a developmental optometrist or something like that.
Right.
So definitely what you want to do is get an actual professional opinion. And I always tell this story because on a personal level, my brother and my sister both had severe hearing losses as children, and they both had multiple surgeries. So it was something of a big deal. I can spot a hearing loss. My one little girl, my own daughter, she's like 4. And I thought, oh man, it's a family thing. And I thought, oh, she's going to get it too. And I took her for a hearing evaluation. And they said, well, she does have a loss. We can't believe you picked up on it. It was so slight. But growing up with a brother and a sister who had hearing losses, I kind of knew the signals, the symptoms. My grandson is deaf in one ear. And the way we discovered it was he was bilingual when he was a child. He had no problems whatsoever. When he was like 4 or something, he said, I hear out of this ear. Which ear do you hear out of?
He didn't realize not everybody.
No,
all the ears. Oh, wow. And he was smart enough to articulate that. Like,
but
that's
the point is, though, that none of us picked up on this, including his grandmother, who saw him virtually every day, who had a history of children in the family with hearing loss.
Yeah. Wow.
So see a professional is my point.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's get into the 5 big important things you should know. And it's funny that we're leading with this one. You can do this. First of all, you can absolutely homeschool a child who has special needs. There are tons of resources to help you navigate your students' challenges. You don't need a degree in special ed. You don't need to be an expert in speech disorders or, you know, autistic behaviors or developmental problems. You are the expert in your child. Now, we just talked about calling in an expert for diagnosis, and that's important. But nothing, I think, in my own experience, replaces a mother's instincts and her desire to help her child. So people would tell me all the time with Ryan, you should take him to this school or have him see this specialist or this, that, and the other thing. And there were sometimes things that I just knew would not be right for him, but I'm not an expert. They would say, you're not an expert. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't have a degree in this. I know my child.
I was an expert in Ryan.
I'm an expert in Sean. I know my children and I know what will work and what their capabilities are. Sometimes it was even things like they wanted to do an evaluation on Ryan. He was, 4 or 5. He was still quite young. And so they set it up for 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said, oh, what, are you kidding me? It's the witching hour. We're not doing anything at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. He's too little. He'll be exhausted. You're not going to get accurate reads on things. You're not, you know, because they put them through the paces of all these puzzles and things and they make them do stuff.
Right.
And I said, no, we account for that. We didn't know because I was trying to get services for him based on these tests and I didn't want the wrong thing to happen. So I actually had a fight to get like a morning appointment, like the stupidest things I had to fight over, but I knew my son, they didn't. So just trust your instincts. You absolutely can do this. And you are probably better suited to do it than the kindest and most wonderful special ed teacher in the world because they don't love your child.
And sometimes we have to remember that in school districts and really in private practices too, people are paid to provide these therapies.
Right.
So my one son, who by the way is a college graduate now and he's been working for years and years and has six kids of his own, when he was a kid, he did have a speech, I don't know if you'd call it impediment. I can't even imitate it, but she told me it was called snaking his S's. His S's had that funny hissing sound.
Oh.
And the school district where I lived, I wasn't nuts about it. So I called a friend of mine who was actually a speech pathologist. We had no money for a private speech pathologist. And I called her up and I said, what would you suggest I do? And she said, Jenny, and she gave me exercises to do with him at home that were very, very simple to correct it. And you know what? It corrected. So yeah. Not everything is complicated. Not everything requires somebody with a master's degree.
Right. Yeah. Again, the simplest thing is often enough. You don't have to overcomplicate life. And yes, some diagnoses are very traumatizing and challenging and all those things. But sometimes it's just a matter of something simple like exercises or some extra work somehow, or a speech therapist a couple of times a week. Like I know so many kids, my friend's grandchildren, who have speech delays. They're just delayed. Mostly it seems to be boys. It's common.
Almost always, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and moms pick up on it. They seem to pick up on it earlier than they used to, which is wonderful. And so you get the evaluation, you have a speech therapist come a few times a week, and they catch up. Like it's not a huge deal.
I do think the advice that you are the expert in your child. I know my one son taught himself to read when he was three. So not a dope by any stretch of the imagination. No. Really bright kid. He could read, I would say, second grade level before he started kindergarten. And he made it. He was sort of been on the young side to make it in New York State. He made it like 3 days before the cutoff. Hmm. And I decided to keep him home for an extra year. And people told me I was crazy. He'll be so bored in school. Here's the thing. He still took a nap every day.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Again, you know your child. And I think you're crazy to send a kid to school under those circumstances.
Yeah. He still took a nap every day. He was miserable if he didn't get his nap in, for goodness sake. So why would I put that on a teacher? Wait a year. He'll be able to read just as well next year. You know. So I do think that you have to trust yourself. That's the biggest thing is nobody has your degree, which is your degree is in Ryan or Sean or mine was in Carol or Chris, that nobody loved them like I did. Nobody that they go to see is willing to throw themselves in front of a train to push them out of the way.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely true. So that's number one. You can do this and trust your instincts. Now, number two, sometimes with a challenged child, doing less is more. Okay, so it may take your child longer to graduate than the typical 12 years. They might not be 17 or 18 when they graduate high school. They might be 19 or 20 or 21. And that's fine. A lot of public school programs for special needs children who are, you know, profoundly learning disabled go to 21. So there's nothing wrong with that. There is no shame in it. If you need to slow down to minimize frustration, to go over things more than once or twice or 100 times, that's fine. It's okay. There's no expiration date on your child. It takes as long as it takes. So, and that I'm not talking about dilly-dallying or goofing off. I'm talking about a child who really seriously needs extra time to learn this.
Yeah. And I think too, sometimes there are advantages to this that we don't see. One of my sons I adopted, well, I didn't adopt him then, but we got him when he was 9 years old. And just because kids who come into the system when they're, you know, 9 years old, they've had learning problems. He didn't have any actual disabilities, but he had great delays as a result of his childhood. And so instead of putting him into fourth grade where he should have gone, they put him into third grade. This was not even my decision. So consequently, he did catch up in a couple of years. He caught up. He was able to read at level and do all his work at level. He did fine. But when he started high school, he was 15 instead of 14. What a difference that made. He was like mature. Emotionally, he was great.
Yes.
He wasn't getting into trouble like a lot of the other little morons were getting into because he had a year more wisdom, I guess, is the only way I could put it.
Well, yeah, I think even when we talk about special needs, we are talking about something very specific. But your child who lacks maturity, emotional maturity, anything like that, keeping them home for an extra year before sending them to college or, you know, maybe slowing down the high school process, maybe do a little bit extra eighth grade before. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think it's wise. I think it's really wise.
Like I say, I saw it with my own eyes that extra year of maturity can make all the difference in the world. It really and truly can. So a kid that's not top of his class necessarily, but just doesn't get distracted by all the nonsense that's going on because he's a little bit smarter than everybody else from a practical point of view. And I think kids tend to feel that way, that I'm not going to go to college with my friends. Or I'm not going to graduate with my friends. So what?
Yeah, that's all right. They're still, if they're your friends, they're still going to be your friends. God knows they can all keep in touch. You know, they are in touch constantly. So that it doesn't really matter. Their ability to take in the information and their ability to make good decisions is much more important than, you know, being in a ceremony with your friends. So you'll have a party a year later. They'll all come. Don't worry about it. It's okay.
And that's kind of what we have to give our kids. It really and truly is. Well,
the space and the time. I mean, it took Sean 2 years to learn division. I mean, a simple division. Division. And that was fine. It's absolutely fine.
He did.
He can do
there
it
you
now.
Go.
And it's fine. It's all fine.
There you go. And we kind of look at that in two things. We look at that in other areas. Like if you have one of my grandsons actually rode a two-wheeler around his second birthday.
I had an early one too. It was like three.
Oh yeah. My word.
It's crazy.
This teeny little kid riding a two-wheeler. It was incredible. I didn't ride one until I was about eight or something. But the fact is that we all differ in those types of things. And that's okay.
Yes.
We've got such a few of my daughters have gone through this again with their boys, where they go to the pediatrician at a certain age, they're supposed to have like 100 words.
Right. Yeah.
And they don't have their 100 words yet.
Freak out more parents with that kind of nonsense. I'm sorry.
Everybody goes, you don't actually, nobody's going to give you a test. At three to make sure you have your 100 words. It's okay. Again, boys will ride their bike at two, but girls will be talking in full sentences by their second birthday.
Right. It varies. And those kinds of statistics they're averages. And some kids are below the average and some kids are above the average. And for the most part, they all even out at some point. So those kinds of things really drive me crazy. And they do terrify parents. Like, you freaked this poor woman out with her three-year-old who is perfectly normal, but who doesn't have 100 words. It's the silliest thing in the world. Don't worry about it. Really, don't worry. If he's five and doesn't have 100 words, then you have something to worry about. But most three-year-old boys don't have 100 words. And that's just one example of kind of the silly. There's an entire industry now that didn't exist when I was a kid. That's the special needs industry. So there are incentives for school districts to find things wrong with your child. And put them in the public school in the classroom and stuff. So you have to kind of bring your experience and your instincts to it and know your child. It's difficult. It's a fine line to walk. You have to, that's again, where you're the expert in your child. So if you think
you want to meet their needs,
yeah,
you want to meet their needs, no question. But at the same time, I saw that definitely when my oldest kids were all adopted. And my first son, like I say, because of his bad educational background, he was in a public school for a while. They did give him reading specialist, worked out very well. My next two came, and now it was the Carter administration, and the government was paying school districts when they had handicapped kids.
Yeah. I think that still goes on.
This is when it started. So I went in and I was told they had auditory processing disorder. And I said, well, what does that mean? Does it mean they can't hear? Well, no, they're non-English.
Oh my gosh, which is not what it means.
No, of course it's not what it means. But that's I'm sure how they labeled it to get money from the federal government. So you do want to be careful about that sort of stuff. The other thing is there's somebody in our extended family. He's not actually related to me by blood, but through marriage. And he had very severe dyslexia. He absolutely did. There's no question about it. And he has advanced degrees now.
Right.
An incredibly successful professional man.
Yeah. I mean, you can address some of these things. And like a diagnosis like dyslexia, it does not mean that your child, you know, is destined to never have an academic life. I mean, there are a million ways you can deal with that. And as a homeschooler, there's still a lot of ways you can deal with that. I know many, many homeschooled students who are dyslexic, and there are programs and there are classes, and it really is not the big deal that it was maybe 15 years ago. You know, or even 10 years ago. It's really not. It's absolutely doable. It's doable for mom and it's doable for the student. So that's number two. is that sometimes you doing less is a little, doing less with a challenged child is more, and taking your time and really giving them the time and space that they need. So let's take a break, Jenny, because we have sponsors, right?
We certainly do. Seton is our primary sponsor, but we do have other sponsors and we're very grateful to.
It's great. I think my Seton education really gave me a lot of the truth, but it was cool to go into an area where you could dialogue with other people and kind of pursue the truth in a different way than just than receiving it. To learn not only in the class how to be good or what is good, but then to also learn outside the class, learning from learning through relationship. I've grown so much as an individual because I can engage not only with the text we read in class, but anything I encounter in the world, I am able to say, okay, this is Hegel talking. I can figure out how to find the truth with people who don't even really know how to dialogue well, because I've been taught so well how to dialogue in the classroom and outside of the classroom with sparring with friends.
I'm Anthony Klein, a Seton Home Studies School graduate and a junior here at Belmont Abbey's Honors College.
The Honors College at Belmont Abbey. To learn more, visit www.bac.edu/honors.
Hi, and welcome back. Thank you very much to our sponsor. We are really, really grateful for the time that they give us and the sponsorship that they give us. So please check out their website. And we are talking about, we have a list of five things you need to know if you are homeschooling your special needs child. And number three, Jenny, what do you think?
Number three is kind of, it's for special needs kids. But when I was thinking about it, it's really for everybody. There are certain special needs kids for whom life skills are as important as academic skills. Sure. Some kids will really struggle to learn things like dressing themselves, eating properly, that sort of thing. They may not be able to do algebra, but they do have to know how to count up change.
Sure. Yeah. Those life, they go into the grocery store.
They can go to a grocery store, how to navigate a bus route or a train route. If you live in a city, how to cook for themselves, right. How to clean their homes. Now, as I say, as I thought about it, I think, I don't care if your kid is a genius. There's a lot of genius kids these days that don't know how to put on a load of wash and push a button.
Right. Yeah. We've talked about this many, many times before. I mean, life skills should be part of every curriculum. But with your child, for example, my special guy here now, he's never going to do geometry or trigonometry or anything like that. But we did do, and I honestly do think also this should be part of everybody's curriculum. He did consumer math, which is a Seton course, which you can enroll in individually or just buy the book. It's kind of an older book. It's from the 90s. It's a Christian book, but it teaches things like how to calculate the interest in your bank account, how to balance your checking account, which nobody really balances their checking account anymore because it's all online. But to know how much money you have in your checking account as you're writing checks or sending Zelles or whatever you're doing.
How about the pros and cons of getting a credit card at 22%
interest? Exactly. Right? That's in there, bank loans, they cover, how to calculate a sale price, for you go to Marshall's and it's 25% off. Well, how much is that really costing me? And that kind of thing. And it's very, very like practical advice. And it gives you the questions that they ask are like real world situations, which I think is really helpful. So for somebody like my guy, for whom, I mean, he's not going to get a mortgage, but he's going to buy a shirt at Marshall's, or he's going to go to the grocery store someday and cook his, and he'll need to know like what a half cup measurement is and stuff like that. Those things are worth spending part of your school time with for these kinds of kids. That is absolutely school, like life skills.
It is. And I think really that important. Sometimes our moms are a little overwhelmed. So it's easier for you to make the cake yourself.
Right. Yeah. It's faster and easier and cleaner.
Child, it's really going to take him time to measure out that half cup of flour or whatever it is. It's worth taking that time.
It sure is. Yeah. Having that child scramble the eggs in the morning and then clean the pan properly and know where things go and know the safety issues involved in cooking and stuff like that. You might want to at some point scale back a little bit on things that aren't going to help them live their life and bump up some of the things that are going to help.
Go nuts with teaching them a foreign language.
Right. Yeah. And that's where that spreading out the school day or spreading out the years is very helpful. So you still get all the academics in that you really need, but you're also taking some time and every week to maybe address these life skills issues
that they, we know they'll need. They, The joke, of course, is how often do you use algebra in your daily life? Well, but you do use like measurements, for example, in your daily life, every single solitary day. Every day you have to learn, you know the difference between a teaspoon and a tablespoon. And I laugh about it. My oldest son married a brilliant woman, absolutely brilliant. But she was raised in a family where they had servants. It was a somewhat wealthy family. And even though she was one of five. But when they had their first baby, she said, had it not been for Gabe, she says, I think I would have killed him. I had no idea how to take care of a baby.
Right. Not a baby family. Yeah.
Well, she had never, there were babies in her family, but they had servants that did all this sort of stuff.
She thought
if she changed his t-shirt, she was going to, you know, pull his arm out of the socket or something.
Oh, the poor thing.
but having a husband who was the oldest of such a huge family where this stuff was nothing for him.
Right. Yeah, of course. He changed a diaper or two in his time, I'm sure.
Once or twice. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, those little skills, depending on where they end up in life, can be learning how to mow the lawn.
Right. Yeah. Just
run the vacuum.
Because some of the challenge that we're kind of facing now is what is he going to do post high school? Because we're investigating, there might be some programs or some job training, but the job is going to entail something somewhat menial, you know, restocking shelves somewhere or, you know, that kind of thing. So there's going to have to be a certain amount of life skill and dealing with people and that kind of thing. And so that's been very much a focus of ours for these last couple of years of high school is that kind of training. And to him, it's almost more important, like you said, than learning Spanish or, you know, having chemistry, or he doesn't need any of that. He's never, and it would just frustrate and confuse him. And it's just not, now we're talking about somebody who has a little bit lower of an intelligence. I don't know what the correct terminology is anymore. It seems to change every 5 years. I'm terrified to say anything.
Probably just insulted everybody or something. Who knows?
I know. I probably did. I don't mean to offend anybody. But I was once called out at a speech I gave for calling my son autistic, Ryan, who had long since passed away. And I was like looking at her like, really, that's what you got out of that speech? Really? I was mortally offended that she was bothering me about this. We don't call people that anymore. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. Just
you
had
don't
no
call,
way. I
you
was
don't call
baffled.
People blind. You say they have, you know, visual impairment or something like that.
Okay. All right.
Like,
well,
I know. We could drive ourselves.
If you came here for looking for politically correct terminology, I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
It's a child like the one we're talking about now, your son, it's tremendously valuable to him that he has been at home.
Oh, yeah.
Where he has been exposed to these life skills on a daily basis. Yes. So he might not learn how to mow the lawn as quickly as somebody else for the sake of argument. Okay. Right. I don't know the kid, so I can't say.
But he does know how to mow the lawn. It took a while. And it took a while for him to overcome the fear and anxiety of the noise and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Because with his diagnosis, there is a lot of fear and anxiety. So he has learned everything in a place where everybody loves him, where he knows he's safe, where nobody's picking on him.
Do it. There was no time frame that like he's somehow a failure if he doesn't learn how to do it after doing it four times or whatever.
Right.
He can do it 400 times. If that's what it takes, he can do it 400 times. It's okay.
Yeah.
So I do think that these practical life skills, the other thing that happens, and I definitely saw this with some of my adopted kids, was even though they had troubled backgrounds, obviously, that's why kids come into the system. The fact is that because they were able to do all these practical, they gained tremendous self-confidence.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I can do that. I mean, you know, the way your three-year-old, when they can finally put their t-shirt on or something, I can do this. Well, for my 17-year-old, sometimes when he acquires a new skill, it's the same kind of pride. You know, right. I can do this. I don't need you to help me anymore. I can do it. I can do it.
And because I can do this, I can do something else.
Yes. And it's,
I'll just have to learn how to do that too.
I think everything we just said in the last 5 minutes is the best reason to homeschool your special kid, because they learn in an environment of love. They can take all the time they need. They know you're not going to bully them or pick on them or make fun of them or anything like that. It's just because you love them and there's love there. And that's the most important thing. So
it really and truly is. Another thing, and I used to talk about this all the time. So that was number three. That was our
third, right?
Helpful hint number three. Number four, I used to speak about this in general for homeschooling. I think it's incredibly important in anybody's homeschool. But if you have special needs kids, it's really important. And that is have a regular routine to your day.
Right. Oh, it's really important to that for that anxiety and fear thing. Yeah.
The expectation, they know what they can expect. So maybe every day we get up at 7:30 and we have breakfast after we get up and we sit down with the books at 9 o'clock and we take a break at 10 o'clock and we take lunch at noon, that sort of thing. And the idea behind this is that the kid could be really hungry and getting agitated at 11:45, but he knows that in 15 minutes he's going to get lunch.
Right. Yeah.
Even if he still hasn't finished his task, he's going to get lunch because we have lunch every day at noon.
That expectation, it relieves anxiety. It creates this safe environment for them. And yes, you know what to expect. So you know that after lunch, we clean up the house a little bit and then we get back to the books. And that at 4 o'clock, we do another tidy of the house and we're learning to pick up our things and put them away. And on Mondays, you do your laundry. And on Tuesdays, this one does their laundry. Like it all creates this kind of expectation of, I don't know, you caring for each other, caring for the house, caring for the school, and also eliminates that, what do we do now? What do we do now? And that anxiety and that
the panic sort of thing. I used it with not special needs kids to stop the complaining. we're literally like, if we ate breakfast every morning at 8 and then we took a break at 10 o'clock for a short snack. Well, don't whine to me at 9 o'clock that you're hungry. You should have had more breakfast then.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah.
Learn how to make important decisions. You know, we have our snack at 10 o'clock every day. And if you're hungry every day by 9, clearly you should have had another piece of toast.
Yeah. It helps cut down too on those, the flapping and the, you know, those kinds of
stimming.
Stimming. I have a flapper. Ryan was like a rubber. He would rub his hands together constantly. Like there's always, but if they have a routine and we're writing now, we're not flapping. We're not running around flapping. We're writing, we're doing our English, we're doing our math, we're doing our reading, whatever. You have a pencil in your hand, you can't flap when you have a pencil in your hand, that kind of thing. So it kind of minimizes those behaviors, which can be, you know, challenging some of those kinds of things. So when you can have a routine that minimizes them, when we have a pencil in our hand, we're not flapping, and then it calms them. And sometimes they actually do go away. I mean, the flapping is not new, but it's not the oldest one either. So, I mean, you know, they come and go and you deal with it, but the routine and that kind of structure really helps with some of those behaviors.
I think it's great for just any homeschool, but yeah, I think it's especially great for kids with special needs.
Absolutely.
Because they are dealing with other issues, as you say, the anxiety, the worry, the fears, the what comes next. And you don't have to worry about what comes next because do the same blessed thing every day.
Yeah.
How long will I have to be in the school? Well, we stop school every day at 2 o'clock. So you know how long you're going to be doing this.
Go look at the clock.
Don't worry about it.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed. It's going to be fine. So anyhow, so those were our first four ideas. First of all, you can do it. Have self-confidence. Sometimes, going a little more slowly, taking a break, taking it a little easy is really good. Life skills are extremely important. Having a schedule or some sort of routine in your home. And then finally, though, you still have to know that it is not some sort of crime to ask for help.
It's not. And you'll need help. You might need help. You probably will need help. And that's absolutely fine. We said you're the expert, and the expert knows when they need help. And to hire somebody or to find somebody, a speech therapist, a reading specialist, a specific kind of doctor. My guy is getting all kinds of tests coming up in April to kind of help us plan the next step for him. Because I'm a little baffled. I've never gotten this far with somebody with these needs before. And so I need help. So we're going to have some help come in, some expert help. And I am still the manager, and my husband and I, we still make the decisions, but we need some guidance here. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with getting help to maybe you need a break. Maybe you need a babysitter. Maybe you need somebody to come in and clean while you deal with these issues, because they're overwhelming and they're time consuming and they're worrisome and all that stuff. So maybe you need an hour every week to go to adoration or something. Any of that help that you need is a good thing and should not make you feel like you're a failure or you don't know what you're doing or the child would be better served elsewhere. you're doing fine. Get the help you need.
You're doing fine. Get the help. And we should just say, if you are a homeschooler, Seton Home Study School does have a special services department.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Now, they charge a bit more for it, although really incredibly not that much
it's
more.
Very, yeah, it's really very reasonable.
Extraordinary,
for,
really.
For what
and
you get.
They will kind of design a program around your child's special needs.
Yeah. And I do think there are other curriculum programs that do that. But Seton has been doing that since the very beginning, really. And they have diagnostic tests. They have all kinds of specialists in there. I mean, they've had experience with just about every single solitary kind of diagnosis you can think of. And they are the kindest people. I've been working with them for 20 years now. And they are the kindest and most sensitive people. And they really, really care about your success as a homeschooler and your child's success. So never feel bad about calling and asking about that, because it's really worth the time and energy and effort and whatever little money they charge you for it. Just give them a call.
Yeah. That's one place to go. There's loads of others. Don't be afraid to ask your mother-in-law. You know, your mother-in-law says, what can I get you for Christmas? You know, if you could get me, I don't need anything. Just get me like a shot with April Maids or something.
Right. Yeah. Oh gosh. Just, that's the best present.
Yeah, wouldn't that be a great gift?
You know, yeah.
But sometimes people will ask, what can I get the family for Christmas? You know what? There's a maid service down the block. And you can get me one or two. One of my daughters had a miscarriage and we got her meals. We didn't make the meals because we all live too far away.
So
we
sent them.
It's like a meal service in her community. You know, we can get meals delivered and we got her a bunch of meals.
That's such a nice idea, especially for the mom with maybe a larger family or the mom who's dealing with some special needs issues and is just run off her feet, going to therapies or having people in the house. And then in addition to soccer and what else, once a week, send her, even if it's just a pizza, like sending her a meal once a week is the nicest thing you could possibly do.
Or something, you know.
It's just such a gift. Yeah. Because it takes all
thing.
Of why dinner like consumes 90% of our brains every day. I have no idea, but it just seems so overwhelming at the end of the day sometimes to get a meal on the table. So that is a nice idea. That's a really good idea, actually.
Yeah, so I guess the help could be in the form of a speech pathologist, but this help could also be in the form of somebody to come clean your house. There are places, this is expensive, but you know, again, if somebody asks you, what can we do for you? Or you have a little bit of extra money in the bank. You can actually take your laundry to a laundromat and they have a fluff and fold service.
Yeah. We have one near here. Yeah.
Yeah. They'll wash it, they'll dry it and they'll fold it for you.
Yeah. That's a big deal too. So, I mean, all of these are asking for help. None of them are a failure. It is you, the manager of your home and your family and your child, deciding how best to use your resources. And that's what managers do. That's what people do.
That's what they do. Don't feel like you can't go to your public school to ask for help. Don't feel like you can't call professionals in your community and say, you know, I really can't afford what you have. Are there any programs around here that I could make use of? If your child has, you know, childhood cancer, you call St. Jude's. They have foundations for everything.
Right. Yeah. There's somebody out there who's got some information that will help you. You just have to, you know, spend the time looking for it.
And these days, you know, with Google, it's easier than it ever was before.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. So
we hope these ideas were somewhat helpful to you. We'll always pray for you and your special needs kids, and we hope that you pray for us. But Mary Ellen, we have a little bit of an announcement.
We do. It's kind of a big one, but it's a good one. It's a good announcement. When we started this podcast over a year ago, we were so filled with ideas and enthusiasm, and we were completely brainless about what was entailed here. And this year has been a really great blessing. But we're starting to get a little burnt out, right, Jenny? I mean, it's getting
harder.
A little
is nice to say. I'm actually a lot burnt out. First of all, I don't think we ever thought of like 52 a year.
52 is a lot. It's a lot.
52 a year. And we have to, and you know, we do actually, we may sound like we're just kind of getting on and gabbing, but we actually, you know, we get a guest, we have to book the guest. We have to talk to the guest about what we're going to be doing and get their bio and this and that. And even Mary Ellen and I have to come up with some sort of talking points that we share with each other before we do something. For example, the five hints for teaching special needs kids. So it has turned out to be a bit exhausting.
It has. And while we love it, we want to continue to love it. We really do. We want to keep producing some of the episodes that you seem to enjoy. So having said that, we're going to take a little hiatus now from the podcast starting January 1st. to March 1st. And we're going to be using that time to kind of refresh and write some new stuff. And we would be delighted if you would make some suggestions. That would be great. But this is going to give us some time also to catch up on some neglected projects, writing projects that we both have. And then we are going to change from our weekly 52-week-a-year format to every other week. And we think that'll give us time to be fresher and more creative to produce the kind of episodes that you all want to listen to. So I hope that you'll stick with us. We think you will. We think you will. But we hope that you'll start tuning in again in March when we come out of the gate with all kinds of new material. And in the meantime, there are like 60 episodes you can listen to if you start to miss us.
Yeah, we're there. Yeah. You can find us. And sometimes I don't know that they're all something you want to go back and listen to, but like Dr. Ray on discipline.
Oh, yes. Once a month, you should listen to
him. You should listen to him constantly, like put on repeat all the time, you know? Some of them are, I think, really, really valuable. And some of them are valuable for your particular situation. For example, special needs kids. Yeah. So by all means, you can find a whole list of them in loads of different places where you listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
So we will miss you. We think we'll come back and like Mary Ellen said, we'll go out of the gate at a fast gallop.
Yes. And in the meantime, we're asking for your prayers for us and we will always remember you in our prayers. And again, we will see you back in March and thank you for being with us.
God bless you and your families.
And now we'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Seton Home Study School. Seton Home Study School is a nationally accredited, faithfully Catholic, private distant learning school that serves students from pre-K through 12th grade. There are currently 17,000 homeschool students enrolled in Seton Home Study School and many, many more who use their books and materials, including several small Catholic schools. Since 1983, Seton Home Study School has faithfully served the homeschool community in the United States and all over the world. Please check out their website, setonhome.org, for more information. And thank you, Seton Home Study School, for sponsoring the podcast, The Stay-at-Home Schooling Moms.